This is Fresh Air. Hamburgers McLean, zero cholesterol donuts, fatless ice cream, no skin crispy chicken. Is it possible that the junk, and some say the taste, has disappeared from junk food? We have three guests today to talk with us about the latest trend toward healthier, low-fat fast food dining. A nutrition activist, a food writer, and a cardiologist. Jane Hurley is a nutritionist at the Center for Science in the Public Interest, a Washington-based lobbying group. Hurley believes that some of the fast food claims about healthy food are real, and some are just marketing.
The McLean Deluxe is the first truly lean hamburger patty to ever be available to the American public. What McDonald's did to cut the fat was to replace half of the fat with water, and to hold that moisture in place when the burger's being cooked, they added a very small amount of carrageenan, which is a perfectly safe vegetable gum. So when you eat this lean hamburger patty, it still is nice and moist and juicy, just like a greasy hamburger would be.
Is McDonald's the only one? Or is this part of a whole trend? What are we seeing going on here?
So far, McDonald's is the only one to hit fat where it really counts at fast food restaurants, and that's in the burgers. I hope that Burger King, Wendy's, and all the other chains are quickly trying to copy McDonald's and come up with their own recipe for a low-fat burger. Actually, the technology here has been around for 30 or 40 years, and I'm amazed that they weren't able to do something like this sooner. What companies are doing are taking the fat out of foods by using perfectly safe vegetable gums like carrageenan and guar gum and pectin and a number of others. These things have been used as stabilizers in foods in the food supply for many, many years. They're perfectly safe, and thankfully, manufacturers have learned that these can be used very successfully to replace the fat in foods, either part of the fat or even all the fat. For example, Kraft has recently introduced a mayonnaise that has no fat in it whatsoever by using these vegetable gums.
A whole variety of fast food chains have been promoting this kind of diet. I mean, Kentucky Fried Chicken talks about how it has its skinless, lower fat fried chicken, and Pizza Hut has had low cheese pizzas, and Dunkin' Donuts has its zero cholesterol pastries, we might call them. So everybody's on the bandwagon, right?
All these trends aren't as healthy as the companies would like them to make us believe they are. For example, Kentucky Fried Chicken has improved their fried chicken by taking the skin off. They're still deep frying the chicken. However, you end up getting 20% less fat compared to the original recipe when you order the new Kentucky Fried Chicken Light.
Now I grew up in the South, and let me tell you, I like fried chicken with the skin on it. It tastes better.
Well, I think that the advantage of Kentucky Fried Chicken's new skinless fried chicken is that you're getting rid of a lot of the fat by removing the skin, but you're still getting a lot of the flavor by deep fat frying that chicken. So for people who have to have fried chicken, I recommend that they get the new Kentucky Fried Light chicken.
So what about the donuts? Dunkin' Donuts, zero cholesterol.
Dunkin' Donuts have made their donuts cholesterol-free by using egg whites instead of whole eggs and by switching from butter to oil. However, the donuts have as much fat as they've always had, and they aren't necessarily real low in saturated fat, which can be even more dangerous for people watching their cholesterol levels than cholesterol in the foods themselves. So I'm encouraging people to not be misled by the cholesterol-free claims on the Dunkin' Donuts, and when they walk into Dunkin' Donuts, they should be aware that what they're getting is a very fatty donut, and it may have quite a bit of saturated fat in it. A couple of their donuts have as much as 4 grams of saturated fat in them. When you think that someone watching the saturated fat in their diet should get no more than 21 grams in an entire day, in one donut, that's 1/4 the amount of artery-clogging saturated fat you should eat for the entire day. So people need to be aware of that and not be fooled by the cholesterol-free claim.
Well, now, I've heard the phrase by critics of all of this new kind of marketing campaign. They call it McFakes, that there is as much fakery going on out there in the sort of new healthy junk food campaign as there is health.
That's true. I'm still recommending that people need to avoid the claims made in advertising or even on packages. There was a new Nutrition Labeling and Education Act passed in November last year and signed into law by President George Bush that will force the Food and Drug Administration to put nutrition labeling on all the foods that they regulate and to make sure that nutrition and health claims on those foods are accurate and not misleading to consumers. That's the good news. Unfortunately, that gives the Food and Drug Administration two more years to get that new law into place. In the meantime, people need to not pay attention to the claims and the bold print on the front of the packages. They need to turn the packages over, look at the fine print, and find out exactly how much fat and salt and whatever else they're watching in their diet is contained in that product. If a product doesn't have a food label, don't buy it. Look at a competitor and see if they have nutrition information on it. If there's no nutrition information on the package, the manufacturer has nothing to brag about, and that's why it's not there.
Now, there have been lots of claims about how fat-free certain foods are, the percentages. They only have 2 or 10 or 15% fat. How do you sort through all this?
People need to be particularly leery of percent fat-free claims on foods. For example, companies are slapping 95% fat-free claims on foods that are very fatty. Budget Gourmet Light, which is being marketed as a healthy frozen dinner line, claims that its line is 95% fat-free, yet the Salisbury steak dinner and the meat sauce lasagna both get about 45% of their calories from fat, which are very fatty foods.
So they're lying then?
They aren't lying. Technically, the companies are telling you the truth. What they're telling you is what the fat content is on a by weight basis. Now, that's very different than what the message people have gotten that they should get, for example, no more than 30% of their calories from fat. Let me explain it this way. If I had 2 pats of butter and I dropped them into a glass of water, I could now claim that that water-butter mixture is 97% fat-free because the weight of the water makes the fat content of the butter seem much lower. The truth is, if I drank that mixture, I'd still end up with 2 pats of butter.
Nutrition activist Jane Hurley has been my guest. Coming up after a short break, Wall Street Journal cultural writer Raymond Sokolov talks about Americans and their obsessions with food, fat, and eternal life. This is Fresh Air. Raymond Sokolov usually writes about the history and science of what we eat, from the ethnic dietary laws to the microculture of the truffle. Lately, he's turned his eye to the new politically correct burger cuisine and what he calls trend surfing in the fast food world.
At Burger King, the one I went to anyway, they had a big, very appealing poster on the wall giving it must have been completely honest nutritional breakdown of what they were actually serving in the restaurant. And, well, it was... you have the number in front of you, I think, but it was many grams of fat in the Whopper, and they were, showing you that they cared about your nutrition by giving you this breakdown of what was in the Whopper. But if you actually cared about counting fat grams, you would just never be eating that at all because it would put you so far toward the daily limit that it would. I mean. On the other hand, I'm not at all, as you've gathered, trying to advise people not to eat Whoppers. I think if they want to do that, from time to time, I suppose Burger King would be happy if we ate them all day, 7 days a week. But that doesn't seem like a very good idea to me, but to have one every once in a while.
Of course, Burger King... Yes, I suppose they tell us that they're more sensitive because all of these Whoppers and lean burgers are made from beef that's never been raised on a former rainforest, right?
Well, that's what they're saying, and it raises certain questions. What defines a former rainforest land? I mean, how long does a place have to be out of the rainforest business before it's okay? I mean, there must come a time when you sort of throw up your hands and say, well, 400 years ago when the Portuguese first came to Brazil, they cleared this forest in order to, raise coffee, and now they want to put beef on it. Is that okay, Burger King? Actually, I think that it's all domestic content, and they're not buying beef from outside this country. I'm not sure of that, but that's certainly trend surfing. To be interested in rainforests. And I think probably they haven't changed their practice of that they're not, in fact, penalizing themselves, because it's hard to imagine anyway that lots and lots of beef was coming off of rainforest land and they suddenly said, no more of that rainforest beef. Maybe that's true, but I would doubt it.
Smart marketing, perhaps.
Yes. Well, then there's McDonald's pamphlet on the environment, which is ostentatiously printed on recycled paper, and the ink is a soya-based green ink. Now, how could anyone be against soya-based green ink?
I'm certainly not me.
I'm not either. I want to say that I think it's a fine thing. I never heard of it before, but it sounds wonderful. but you have to admit that it has it reeks of trend surfing.
Hmm. Well, I think of some French friends who were visiting me a year or two ago, and we were all in California, and they looked at the menus with these sort of American Heart Association approval stamps on them, and then they went to a winery, and when they offered a sip of wine to one of their children, the staff of the winery came out and grabbed it away and lectured them on how they were destroying their children, and that they came away saying, you know, you seem to run a kind of palate police force here in this country.
I think that there's a lot to that. Anything that smacks of self-indulgence or loss of control should be outlawed completely, or supervised in such a way that it's no longer any fun, should be really looked down on.
Now, that's not your position.
No. I mean, that's what I think. That's what I take to be in the air, a kind of politically correct insistence that that everything be conducted according to the most extreme rule-bound view of what health is, what proper diet is, and at every moment that you take the danger of cholesterol, which is clearly something that is true and that matters, and you turn it into an absolute rule. You never have you absolutely cut out. You become totally abstemious. Eat only certain kinds of foods. Never have. I mean, it turns into a poison what is in fact something that shouldn't be overindulged in over a long period.
But butter can be habit forming.
Fat tastes good, and it also makes it possible to cook certain things which have grown up. I mean, people talk about cultural diversity, part of which is another buzzword. But one of the things that cultural diversity has created over a long period of time is traditional diet, which is filled with things that the same people who are in favor of cultural diversity don't want you to eat.
For example,
well, the whole of anything that's sautéed in a fat, or certainly deep frying, these are things that that are part of traditional diet. There are thousands of variations. Say in the Caribbean, Hispanics who come here, exactly the people whose cultural diversity. I mean, I certainly want to preserve, but which has become an article of religion for certain politically correct pressure groups, their cultural diversity includes cooking with lard, and it includes what I know historically is an African heritage that came with slaves into the Caribbean, and which included a lot of deep-fried dumplings, and what we would call southern frying in this country, but it's really a much more widespread phenomenon, part of an African importation of African food ideas that you can still see in their root form, say in Nigeria. There's a black-eyed pea fritter that called akaraje in Nigeria that spread throughout the New World in the 16th and 17th centuries. And it becomes corn fritters in this country, and they do 17 different variations on it in the Caribbean. Well, that particular form of cultural diversity, which is really a very basic kind of food for people coming here, is extremely dangerous and unhealthy by the standards of a politically correct diet, because it is so firmly rooted in unhealthy saturated cholesterol-rich fat. You have to. Just seems to me that moderation is a great virtue here. If those are interesting foods, they taste good. They represent a whole lifestyle going back centuries. They really symbolize a group's history. So, who are we to turn and tell these people they're eating something that's bad for them? Well, in what sense is it bad for them? Especially to see it as something you can never do. It's this absolutist attitude that I object to, and the constant preoccupation with it, as though it really. I mean, I used to before my back went out, I used to do a lot of running, and that was my preferred form of exercise. And I used to run with this other guy, and we'd do 6 or 7 miles, and our gallows humor was that we'll. Now we're going to be hit by a bus running in the street here, and all those extra years we've earned with this running will be for naught. But I mean, I think people really think that every time they don't eat butter or they do eat some fad diet food, that they're actually that there is some balance account, that it really adds up that way, and it obviously does not.
Nope. Six more hours here, I've won. 8 more hours there, I've lost with the pork roast, that sort of thing.
Right, exactly.
Raymond Sokolov writes for The Wall Street Journal and Natural History magazine. Coming up, the view from the cardiologist's office. This is Fresh Air. Finally, in our journey through the territory of fast food and fat, we went to one of the nation's leading cardiologists, Dr. Thomas Graboys, at the Harvard School of Public Health. Graboys says the best guide is common sense, and that worrying too much over fatty food can be more damaging than eating it.
There's a lot of concern about cholesterol, and I think it's important to be concerned about cholesterol within the context of all the other risk factors for heart disease, but it's important also to put the issue relevant to any given individual. For example, one would be much more concerned about an elevated cholesterol in a 45-year-old man who's had a heart attack, as opposed to an 80-year-old person who feels perfectly well and goes for a physical and is found that their cholesterol is a bit elevated.
Any ideas why we Americans fret so much about these things?
Well, I don't know. I think that we all understand that stress is a real issue, and while we give lip service to trying to deal with our particular stress, diet is something that we can it's something that we can seemingly do something about. You can try to stop smoking. You can change your diet. You can exercise on a regular basis. Those are concrete examples of what each of us can do for ourselves. Now, modifying stress, which perhaps is the most important element, I think, in the development of heart disease, is a much, much more difficult task.
We've all read about many of these studies of Asians who have come to this country, particularly Japanese who come to this country, begin to, they partake of the American diet, and they suddenly develop cardiovascular diseases that they didn't have in their home country. That seems to many people kind of proof positive that Americans' fatty food diet is what produces cardiovascular disease.
Well, I would take issue with a little bit of that because it's the diet and the company that the diet keeps. For example, if you look at Japanese Americans who have assimilated into a Western style of living, particularly in urban areas with all the attendant stress, that's when you begin to see the increased prevalence of heart disease within that population. Among Japanese who retain really their ethnic heritage and culture, independent of the amount of dietary cholesterol they're taking in, you don't find those increases in heart disease. I mean, if you look at the pattern of heart disease in the United States over the last 5-6 decades, it has really been an urbanization of America. In the breadbasket of America, when farmers ate 2 dozen eggs a week, they didn't have heart disease. But as we found ourselves in crowded urban areas with all the attendant stress and rage and anger and hostility, that was translated in the development of serious pockets of heart disease.
Dr. Thomas Graboys is a Harvard University heart specialist. I'm Frank Browning.